Hey all, this is Ryan, and you're listening to the Fortune Teller Podcast. Today, we have Baron Solomon, founder of Solo Music. Solo Music is a global music marketplace utilizing smart contracts and NFTs to create digital music assets and connect artists, fans, and the industry at large. Welcome to the podcast, Baron. Let's start by having you introduce yourself and share some of the background story of how you got into crypto.
Definitely. First of all, thank you, Ryan, for having me this morning. Really excited to be here talking with you guys. My journey into cryptocurrency is not dissimilar from a lot of other people. Have been in and around the IT space for a very long time. Started my career in IT consulting, primarily around helping small to medium-sized businesses migrate from physical infrastructure to virtual infrastructure and introducing them to cloud technology back when that was really first becoming more mainstream. And so I spent a lot of time educating people on emerging and newer technologies. And as part of that, it was my job to sort of stay up to date with, you know, what was coming and what was the next wave of technological innovation. And so my interest in blockchain from the very beginning has always been around the utility and the value add that it can present in the way that we, you know, behave economically as a society, and the access that it can give to people who desperately need access to, you know, greater liquidity or more control over their careers and their financial, you know, futures. So got into blockchain around 2014, have done pretty much every job that you can do in this space up until this point. I have operated a commercial mining facility actually in Nashville, started there, moved in eventually into DAP, you know, analysis and production, and really spent more time leveraging the technology and how to apply it to industry and really bring it into the mainstream, which is where my focus brought me to Solo Music.
Do you see parallels when you were working IT and educating people on the cloud to blockchain in terms of that learning curve, in terms of the barriers of entry? Where do you see similarities?
I think the main thing that I see that's so similar is that people are just in general automatically resistant to something that they don't inherently understand. Yep. And once you are able to break down the barriers of education and make them understand and realize that this scary piece of technology that they are nervous to begin utilizing. I mean, you should have been part of some of the conversations that I had about cloud back in the day with people of, you know, where is this? Am I sending my information up to a satellite in the sky? You know, and I mean, it was all just this misinformation and a hodgepodge of YouTube links and, you know, information that they had learned themselves on their own. And what it ultimately did was cause a lot of people to be resistant to something that was going to dramatically impact their efficiency as a company. And so blockchain, I see us very similar in terms of positioning as to when I first got into cloud technology, where the actual application and the efficiency around the use of blockchain technology inside of companies is very quickly catching up to all of the more, you know, I guess we would describe them, us crypto guys, as the more fun aspects, right, of the industry around DeFi and NFTs and all this fun and exciting stuff. But I think the similarities and the parallels are most assuredly there between the two in terms of eventually people will realize this is cheaper, it's faster, and it's better. And in the end, cheaper, faster, better always wins. So that's why, you know, I'm so bullish on this entire space. I'm extremely bullish on, you know, blockchain's ability to impact the music industry as a, you know, more specifically for us. And, you know, I think that the parallels, you can draw them directly between the two technologies in terms of both adoption and, you know, a lot of use case that people are going to see in the not too distant future.
And those use cases, they're going to come from the efficiency. I think that's something clear that we as an industry need to articulate to those outside of the space, that it's not about this big revolution that's going to take place, this anarchy against the system. It's simply a way to do things better, faster, cheaper, which is a very similar pitch in any technological innovation. And that's where blockchain really is going to come in to change the world. For so long in the history of the internet, we've been able to transport information. The internet broke down the barriers of information to getting access to new content. But blockchain is going to break down those barriers for money and anything that deals with financialization of that money. And that's something I'd love to lean into as we talk today about the music industry. To date, that efficiency has been slowed down to almost distancing the artist and their fan to the greatest extent today. I think the music industry has failed in finding a way to truly monetize in a position that benefits the demand of fans and also puts the artist in a position where they're in the driver's seat. And this is really where financialization of the music industry comes into play. I think to date, the music industry is a $20 billion industry, which really is nothing in comparison to what it can be. Music is the blood of culture. It's a livelihood that we all move to, the beats that we all move to every day of our lives. It's something that should be of one of the highest values that society has and attributes value towards. So that's something I'd love to talk about today. And I think it'd be amazing if we could hear some of the background story of how you got into the NFT space, what that means for you in the music world, and what the origin story of solo music really was.
Definitely. First of all, I could not agree with you more. I think that music is one of the few universal languages that we all speak and we all instantly can connect around. And being undervalued as an industry is a direct result of the improper implementation of emerging technology in a lot of cases in the form of like streaming. Streaming realistically is a terrible deal for the music industry. We pay $10 a month and we get access to every song in the history of mankind for free at our fingertips. That is a dichotomy that has not existed for a very long time, but has been a direct contributor to why I think the music industry is now saying it's ready to embrace this sort of decentralized revolution and to move forward with, you know, economic tools that will empower artists to move forward in their careers and ultimately to deliver better, you know, content and more music to their fans, which is really ultimately, you know, kind of what we all want out of this whole situation. From my perspective, being in Nashville, being rooted in the city, having friends that are in the music industry, have been around the music industry, understanding a little bit about how the back office economics of the, you know, industry as a whole work, it was apparent to me from day one that there are very few industries that stand to be as changed economically as the music space. You have the most confusing contracts in the music industry that exist right now around mechanical royalties, performance royalties, likeness, image, publishing. I mean, there's so many aspects that go into how artists earn money. And the main piece of feedback that I was getting directly from the artists is that a lot of them don't even necessarily understand how, when, and why they get paid. I mean, we have a songwriter that we're working with on one of our first drops. His name is Tommy Cecil. And as it turns out, there is another Tommy Cecil who lives in Washington State. And on more than one occasion, they have actually sent his royalty check, the Nashville Tommy Cecil's royalty check, to the Tommy Cecil that lives in Washington State. This is the kind of inefficiency that we're talking about. And this is at scale. That is not an unusual story for me to hear. So in terms of the actual embracing of this technology, I knew that music was ready for it and that it was necessary. My background in music, my parents were singers when I was growing up. I spent a lot of time in and around the space, actually, you know, was a performer myself, you know, for a while, and really just always have loved this concept and this idea of music being an international language of a group of collective things that we just universally as a people can love. And so when it came to actually looking at ways to apply this technology, which again has kind of been my whole bent this entire time of, you said it best when you're talking about educating people around the efficiencies that this technology can create, I think that is the great disservice that a lot of the best thinkers in this space are doing for themselves right now, is by not trying to reach back across the aisle, so to say, to explain why we are so powerfully confident that this technology is going to change the game for every industry, not just music, but for everything, right? Is a lot of people love to exist in the sort of esoteric space that we like to populate as crypto enthusiasts, which is this bigger, greater future, you know, that will come around with the man falls down and all the people share the wealth amongst themselves. And I think those are great ideals. And I think that decentralized finance and DeFi itself should be aiming to give more power to the people. But in the immediate, we can directly impact somebody's ability to deliver art to people that may need it, right? I mean, art moves people. It changes the way that people view their day and makes an overall impact in the way that they go about their business. And so from our perspective, if we can coach the industry up, if we can teach them how to leverage this technology, and we can put products in front of them, you know, that ultimately they will learn to love, then we're doing the right things and we're making all the right moves. And so that has been our perspective around the NFT space more specifically, is teaching people how to leverage this technology to build sort of the fan club of the future, if you will, right? We have all of these ways that people interact with their fans today, a lot of Patreon stuff where they're paying, you know, a monthly subscription amount to get access to content, or you may have a lifetime ticket that you can buy where you become part of an artist's sort of inner sanctum. But never has an artist had the direct ability to deliver content to a core subset of fans and actually deliver value for those fans. Because now I own an asset that gives me direct access to this individual, to their art in a greater and more impactful way. And so now we're not only, you know, leveraging this technology to get access to content that we maybe didn't have access to before in a new and exciting way, but we're actually building value together as we work towards this future of, you know, this fan club model that we are sort of working on and pioneering right now.
The world of money is so core to solving the problems of this industry that it's almost like a no-brainer as the next evolution of the music industry. The example you gave of the musician you're working with and his royalty checks being sent to a different person is kind of mind-blowing that still exists in the digital age. I mean, you could in theory use PayPal, but that just shows that the industry giants that be today want to continue using checks, want to have the throne that they have today in the music industry. Smart contracts come along, and we saw this with DeFi, and say you can know exactly what is happening with the money, when and where, at all times. And the individual who is the sender, the individual who is the receiver, will always know the exact breakdown. It's transparency at the core. And I think that's something that's been lacked, or at least with the problems that you've brought up, it seems like transparency has been a big lack in the music industry. As you were talking about, the contracts are so long that the musicians don't really understand the full context of what they're necessarily signing. Blockchain comes in and says, hey, we're going to attribute transparency to value. And because of that transparency, you as a creator have complete understanding, if not control, you have at least complete understanding of how value flows, which at the end of the day is where any industry is going to lean towards. If you can control the purse, you can control the incentives of where people are moving into. And you brought up new use cases. The idea that a fan now gets direct access to a musician, or a fan now has something that is scarce in value, and because of that could gain in popularity or gain in value over time. What are some of those use cases that have taken shape so far in the NFT space? And what are some of those use cases that the artists have really opened up to and are looking to explore in the future?
Definitely. I think that my favorite projects overall in the NFT space are the ones that lean the hardest into this idea of community building. And I think that strategizing around this community building aspect of what NFTs can represent is going to be that, you know, 1.0 way for most artists to embrace this technology and get into this space. And from our perspective, you know, the projects that we have been most closely eyeballing to say, hey, maybe some of the things that have worked, you know, across the aisle in this other project could work for us. It was all around this concept of giving exclusive access to your NFT holders to things that otherwise might not be readily available for them. So we've been working with certain musical artists that want to approach it from the perspective of actually raffling off a 1-hour Zoom FaceTime session with them as a part of their NFT community. We've worked with artists that said, hey, I want to do a Zoom songwriting session. And if I end up cutting it, I'll give you 25% credit. And anybody on the face of the planet can buy that interface with these songwriters. And these are not nobodies. I'm talking about projects and people that have cut multiple number one, you know, top 10 Billboard kind of hits that want to open this new wave of interaction up to people and be able to directly contribute to the finances around their career. So many of them get locked into these deals where if they want to generate additional income, there really isn't a very good way for them to do that. I mean, they can always go play more shows, but up until this point in time, they haven't really been able to fully monetize and gain liquidity access to ultimately what is the real value that they are providing, which is their artistic ability. And so now you have this new wave of possibilities where, you know, some of our additional things, I'm just trying to think of, we've got so many projects that we're working through right now that I'm so excited about that it's difficult to pinpoint one particular thing. I mean, I think obviously the two that I've identified so far are really cool and will, you know, sort of change the game in terms of what people are doing right now. But, you know, we have artists that have said we want to do more of a metaverse style where they want to create avatars and they want to start plugging people into, you know, their own little universe and ecosystem. There's different ways that these artists are leveraging this technology. And I think the biggest thing that we can do for people, specifically the artists that work with us, is say, here's how you can use the technology. Now, use your creative brain to go crazy and let's go build something really cool together. You've got these artists that are the creative superpowers that really reside in this industry. And it's from their brains that people really see and experience value in the music industry. So why would we not, as a platform, make it as easy as humanly possible for fans, new fans, to interact with this technology in a new and exciting way and really teach these people how to leverage this tech to further their career? And I think that, you know, is really where our primary focus is right now. It's just education. We want people to understand all of the new tools that they have at their fingertips and how to really move the needle forward, move the ball forward with their, you know, with their respective careers in and around this new space.
These use cases are so exciting for fans. I think to date, the music industry has focused on the long tail of revenue generation. It's streaming, it's concerts, things that need mass really to attain some type of monetary velocity. And because of that, artists have not had the at least monetary mechanism set up for them to want to have these personal interactions with fans. Fans backstage, they'll get a picture with the artist, but there isn't that sense of, you know, humanness, that connection that the fans really want to feel with the artist. These use cases are bringing it. And I think we're going to see that idea of the thousand true fans start to play out with every major artist, where even someone as big as Drake would be dropping an album that maybe one of the buyers, one of the largest bidders, gets an hour session with him on Zoom, and maybe they jam on a beat together that can be used. That top 1% engagement, that's where majority of the value is going to come for these artists, and they can double down for the first time ever. That concept of 100 true fans is going to expand way past just content creation into all other aspects that we walk through as we engage with things that we like and we enjoy as people. As you're bringing up some of the new developments and how you're positioning solo music, could you walk us through the platform, some of the offerings, and how you specifically connect fans with music and the artists?
Definitely. Solo music was founded and has been staged out into various sections of adoption and rollouts of technology in this space. So NFTs are really just the beginning for us. We are pioneering ways forward with ticketing, with tokenized royalties, with actual distributions on chain occurring with, you know, the big publishing powers that exist today. But for us, you know, beginning this journey with a platform that is as easy to use as humanly possible is our objective. And so I grew up in a very rural town in South Georgia prior to moving to Nashville, Tennessee. I have family that live down there. They still don't even know what a Bitcoin is. And so from my perspective, if I was doing my job well, and if our company does its job well, I can convince my aunt to go onto my platform, have her interact with a smart wallet, have her interact with a smart contract, and be none the wiser, and go in and buy an amazing product, an amazing NFT, and be in and out of the platform in less than 5 minutes. And that is what the objective has been from a technological perspective. We are all about adoption. We want to drive as easy an onboarding experience as we possibly can manage. And so we have constructed the entire platform to enable credit card payments. Obviously, you can pay with, you know, crypto, whatever crypto you would like, and then those assets are yours and you can export them to any, you know, Ethereum compatible smart wallet that you would like to. But we also have made a way for people who are not familiar with smart wallets, who would be terrified of this idea of a, you know, 10-word seed phrase and all of their assets being completely gone if they forgot it for whatever reason. That really freaks people out. So, you know, we've tried to remove as many of the terrifying, if you will, aspects of getting involved in cryptocurrency for the first time, or blockchain for the first time rather, and have constructed our platform in a way that anybody can go on, interface with this technology, and have an unbelievable experience in the first 5 minutes that they're there. And then once they get in, once we have them, then we can start to roll out the more aggressive aspects of this technology that we know to be life-changing, but that maybe people haven't really grasped their head around yet, you know? And so from our perspective, starting with this aspect of community building, starting with NFTs, starting with just introing artists into how to leverage the tech, and then we get into concert ticketing, and you want to talk about some jacked up contract situations. These poor artists and the ticketing contracts that they have today are just insane. The secondary marketplace, most of them don't even make any money when they sell tickets on the secondary marketplace. They have to pre-negotiate into their original contracts a certain portion of secondary market sales just so that they can experience some of the appreciation that occurs. Why are people paying $1,000 for a ticket? Because they want to go see that artist. It has very little to do with the promoter or the manager or the label. They are there to experience art that they love from that human being, that individual. And there's a great disservice that is occurring in the industry right now where the bulk of the wealth is not flowing back to the people that are creating the highest amount of value. And that is something that this technology absolutely solves in spades. So, you know, for us, I hope that it was a very broad description of what we're doing, obviously, but I think you get the gist of what I'm saying here is we're trying to help people leverage all of the tech, but we want to, you know, eat the elephant one bite at a time. And let's start with something that people can understand and then continue to layer on new aspects of this technology as we think our audience is ready for it.
Do you think, as you're looking at the buyer, that adoption, meaningful adoption, will happen from the buyers that are already in crypto today? The people that are buying NFTs that are comfortable with the space that may be spending 10 Ethereum, which is 35 grand on an NFT. Do you think adoption from the buyer side starts there first, or do you believe that it starts somewhere more mainstream with a less crypto native audience?
So it's interesting that you say that because we've taken a very two-prong approach in the way that we are even choosing to market our projects. So we obviously have PR and marketing that is specific to the blockchain side of this industry and appealing to that crowd. You know, the crypto Twitter and the blockchain community is this absolutely massively hilarious, disjointed group of degens from around the world who are working in amazing projects every single day and are really pushing the limits on, you know, what is going forward. And I think sometimes that what that causes is for our community, I say our because I'm definitely part of the problem. You know, our community wants to embrace the most aggressive versions of this technology and people that are really pushing the limits and leveraging what is possible, when in reality, to achieve the level of adoption that we all need for the, you know, rising tide to sort of raise all the boats, we have to reach back down and say, no, 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 let's go back to the basics. Let's intro people to this technology in a way that is going to help them really understand what all the value that can be created through leveraging this tech is going to be. And I think from my perspective, what we're trying to do is to target the music specific audience where 99.9% of the adoption that has not occurred yet will come from. The crypto community has specific projects that they love. And for some of our artists, they do want to go with more of your one of one, you know, generative artwork, like really lean into the crypto aspects. Because believe it or not, there are a lot of musicians out there who have become fans of this technology on their own and have researched this a ton. Obviously, you see, you know, some very specific examples with Blau and with Kings of Leon and with some of these other bands that have already done NFT drops. But I think from our perspective, we want to show the 99% that have not come in yet that there is more strategy to this and more value to this than just a JPEG, which is what they think it is right now. And so that's really where we're putting our focus, is to try and appeal to both sides, but to lean more heavily into the 99% that has not quite maybe interfaced with that technology for the first time.
That's awesome. We need people who are bridging the gap in the space. So many of the NFT projects are continuing to focus on the current community, which I think statistically it's somewhere between 50 to 100,000 buyers who are in these NFT projects. It's the same group of people. And is it a problem? I don't know. It's something that we enjoy being a part of, because I think for crypto, it gave us all a community that was not centered around a token. It was a community centered around a cultural aspect, artwork. And that felt great. And I think the crypto community moves with memetics or memes. And that's really how we communicate, because crypto is innately global. We don't all speak the same language by default. But memes are universal. We all can get along with and understand a meme. And that's why crypto for so long in the NFT space has been focused on them. But of course, mainstream adoption starts to happen when you have people that don't need to understand crypto utilizing these products. Mm-hmm. And I guess that's something I'd love to end with. We always like to ask a final question on the Fortune Teller podcast.
Okay.
So it is, if you're ready for it.
I mean, I hope so. We're gonna find out here in just a minute.
If you had a crystal ball in front of you right now, what could you most confidently predict will happen in the financialization of digital music by, let's say, the end of next year?
End of 22, where are we sitting from a financialized aspect of this industry? It's moving so rapidly. And I can tell you, just based upon the projects that we have in the hopper as an organization that, unfortunately, I would love to tell you all about today, but NDAs and contracts are where they are. And so I have to hold off for just a bit. But we are already speaking with some of, if not the biggest publishers and players in this whole game that we have. And they have begun to take this technology seriously. And so my big prediction by the end of 22 would be that you see these massive companies really beginning to lean in hard into this technology and starting to try to use that as a tool for themselves. And I think that creating as much efficiency as this technology is going to create inside the music industry, specifically around the back office and the way that the money flow will go down, will cause the greatest shift in terms of creative power and ability that we have ever seen. And so for my prediction for the end of 22, I think that, you know, you have these massive partnerships that are beginning to be rolled out between maybe some layer ones and, you know, big groups, right? Big names that I can't, again, divulge, but just to give, you know, some examples, like some Universal, Sony, you know, Warner Chappell. I mean, these are big time names that now have taken an internal employee who maybe had heard of blockchain before and said, all right, you're in charge of NFTs now. Go out and figure out exactly what we need to do. And I'm talking multi-billion dollar multinational organizations have taken that approach. But just now, when we are having these conversations with people, they're starting to come around to this idea that maybe they should be paying closer attention. And so I think that's what you'll start to see, is a lot more interaction between the big boys and us DJs. They're going to have to come talk to us to figure out what's going
on. It's a shift in their entire business model to date. It's so funny, because it's the same story we preach in DeFi, where in the intersection of DeFi and fintech is where the magic will happen. They have the users today, they have the audience, and that audience doesn't need to know about the underlying technology.
No.
Same thing for these major record labels.
Definitely. I tell everybody, when you download an app to your iPhone today, you don't think to yourself, I wonder if their infrastructure is hosted with AWS or Google Cloud. You don't care about that. you just want the app to work. You want the use case that you downloaded the application for. And so as soon as people in DeFi and blockchain overall understand that aspect of stop, you know, selling your value as it pertains to what you're doing around the tech itself, because the tech evolves every 30 seconds in this world. There's some new piece of technology that can be leveraged. And if your only selling point is that, you know, you have low gas fees, well, everybody has low gas fees these days. People shouldn't even be concerned about gas fees, right? Like, they should be concerned more with how is this technology enabling me to gain greater access to my favorite artists. And that's really the aspect that we're, you know, choosing to focus on at Solo.
I love that you brought it back to your cloud days. At the end of the day, no one cares that it's hosted on AWS or Google Cloud.
That's it, man.
The music industry is going to have a massive unlock with NFTs. Thank you so much for joining today, Baron. Wherever you're listening to this, be sure to check out the show notes for all the links Baron mentioned in our conversation. And if you get a chance, please follow us on Twitter. We are at UseTeller, or join our newsletter to find out about our upcoming episodes.